You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
How, Doggy? We won again!
This is good, but what is best in life?
The open steppe, fleet horse, falcons at your wrist, and the wind in your hair.
Wrong! Conan, what is best in life?
To crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and to hear the lamentation of their women.
That is good!
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
Wolfman's got bars!
Make love in the hammock!
What?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 144 for the 20th of August, 2011. The black screen will go by away by all by itself, Josh.
Hey, it was taking longer than normal.
No,
I was just checking.
It doesn't. It's the same as it always is. All right, I'm Dave McVeigh. That was a rough intro. Should we start again?
Yeah, no. That was a pretty good one.
Yeah, whatever.
That was a pretty good one. I'll talk into the mic, in fact.
I'm Dave McVeigh. This is Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
I'm tired. It's weird. When I didn't get up on time, the whole day has been thrown off.
That's how I feel. I was out running around all morning, and it's like, oh, man, I feel like I should be in the studio already. I don't know what's going on. And Richard Gray from TheRealBits.com, back again.
Yeah.
Now, this seems to have been a campaign on Twitter to get you on this show.
I have 17 accounts, yeah.
Time to make him a regular. Put him on the cartoon. Put him on the artwork.
It takes a long time, and you have to get involved, and we have to call Josh again. And
well, I contacted Josh. He never contacted me back, so...
Aww.
He didn't love me anymore.
No,
anyway,
fair enough.
This is Film Actually.
I don't either.
It is? Isn't this Geek Actually?
No, it's first, and it's not Geek Actually.
I'm confused.
Wow. Me too. All right, for those
what's going on?
This is Film Actually. This is the official movie podcast of GeekActually.com, and normally we record this second. Yeah. We are moving house, and so we are moving studio, in effect, and so we had to do house hunting this morning, so... Things were delayed because it was going to be an inspection, and then I thought, well, we'd just push everything back by an hour, and then I thought it's going to get too late in the day. So we decided just to drop the Geek Show this week, and we're back for Film Actually, but we're all a bit discombobulated. So if that's why we feel a bit discombobulated, we're all out of our minds. But this week on this show, we got a pair of reviews. We got two big films opening this week. We've got Conan the Barbarian. And Cowboys and Aliens.
I got nothing.
No, I got nothing.
Olivia Wilde's hot, though.
Oh, wait a minute.
There you go. There she is.
Although she doesn't appear like that in the film. Plus, we have a brand new list of five. Because of Cowboys and Aliens, we thought, what about a list of genre-bending or blending movies that are worth watching? You know? To have a look at those, you know? So, that's our list. It's kind of wishy-washy, but there you go. That's it.
Nah, forget it.
And I just want to remind people that you can watch us record this show live. Now, we've been very, very bad the last few months about timing. And we really need to lock this down. So we're going to say at this point that you can start watching Film Actually roughly around the 1:30 p.m. mark, Australian Eastern Standard Time. Which is UTC plus 10 at geekactually.com live. And you can join our chat room, who you will hear us refer to every now and again. And Mike from West Canada in our chat room would like to point out, Josh, that it sounds like a great list and Minority Report would be at the top of mine.
I'll stab you.
For those who don't know, there's been an ongoing backwards and forwards between Mike in our chat room and Josh about Minority Report, because as is public knowledge on the show, Josh is not particularly fond of Minority Report.
And you know what? It's actually just a particular fondness. Like, it's not like I hate this film. It's just I would never put it at the top of any list ever for anything.
That's
so, you know, it's like it's
what about
in the
top five films named Minority Report?
there's not five of those.
I'm sure we could dig up five of them.
Five movies on the same title, Dave. You couldn't do
I think we need to look hard on that one.
You know what? You're on.
Okay, I'm just saying.
All right, we like to start the show normally with feedback and what we've been watching, but we're going to move the feedback section to the end of the show because it always takes up so much time, and we just want to get rolling on things, really. So stick with us. We'll come back to feedback at the end. But we will talk a little bit about what we've been watching. And what have we been watching, guys? Anything interesting this week?
I saw The Company Men last night, which I missed at the cinema.
Oh, so did I.
On Blu-ray, but it's it's a movie we've sort of been expecting for the post-financial crisis, and it's Kevin Costner's in it, been in a minor role, but it's mainly I've forgotten that Ben Affleck is in it, and Chris Cooper, and the incomparable Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah, we actually got screenings to that and couldn't make it.
No, I was the same.
Yeah, and so I've been wanting to see that one though. Yeah. It looks interesting. Josh, anything you've been seeing?
Smashing through Monster still. There are 75 episodes, so it will be for a while.
What are you up to?
I'm up to 16, 17 or something like that. They're reasonable length episodes, so it's sort of
7 hours
slow.
Each.
I watched Sherlock Holmes again.
The 3-part miniseries or the movie?
No, the movie. The movie.
Oh, yeah.
I have got but haven't watched yet Luther season 2.
Right.
Which I am very keen to see because I liked season 1. I just thought it ended very abruptly. And very much kind of in a cash cow kind of. If you wait long enough, we might give you something else. And apparently now they have, but it's kind of the same sort of thing apparently at the end of the season as well. And I'm like, God damn it, I don't want to look forward to
that. Because I actually heard from a couple of different sources that Luther season 1 kind of peters out in the end. It's like it starts really strong.
It doesn't peter out. It actually stops really suddenly. And it kind of what you thought was going to be a very finished series, like it's got kind of a story to tell and you think it's going to wind up really cleverly, it doesn't, and kind of takes that ending away, like the possibility of it just rips it out from under you right at the end, and then literally finishes with I think the last bit line being, well, what do we do now? And you're like, oh, you can't be serious.
Mike from Canada wants to know, what the hell you've been doing with your free time, Josh? Because only 10-ish episodes in 1 week. Come on.
Dude, I have a game.
He's just trying to bait you.
I have a game at the moment, which I can't give you the name of, that I'm currently slogging through, and it's taking up a good section of my life and slowly destroying my physical health.
It's Hungry Hungry Hippo, isn't it?
Yep, yeah. Absolutely. Now, I can't tell you what it is, but it is destroying my life, and it is amazing. So, movies be damned, and same with game. TV series right now.
Fair enough.
I have priorities.
Now, I think all three of us can very quickly just chime in. We don't want to give a full review because it doesn't actually come out until September, and we'll actually review it, and we'll review it properly. But we all saw the remake of Fright Night this week. And surprise, surprise, this was actually a really damn good film.
It's not a shite night.
It's not a shite night at all. It was actually damn good.
I incredibly enjoyed that. I've been smiling every time I think about it. Since.
Yeah, and
like,
I immediately thought as soon as I walked out of the cinema, I'm buying this on Blu-ray.
Yep.
You know, it's
and
like
look, even Dave Kay, who's a good friend to the show, who doesn't like horror, loved that film. Like he was leaned over
because
he's like, I'm going to have to buy this twice on Blu-ray.
It does exactly what the original did, which infuses it with humor throughout.
And as you said, trailer-wise,
trailers on the market. They don't give that indication at all.
No,
and it's really quite a funny show.
And I think you pointed out, I didn't realize it at the time, it was one of the writers from Buffy, which
Marty
makes
Noxon.
Perfect sense.
Yeah, Marty Noxon wrote the screenplay, and I mean, Marty Noxon was a staple of the Buffy writing.
Absolutely.
Team,
so. I think she actually took over.
Is it a she or a he? I've never been able
to
figure it out. It is a she. Okay.
And around season 6, so she's responsible. She was kind of virtually the showrunner, I think, around that time when Whedon was off doing
Marty
other things.
Marty Noxon also did a lot of work for Angel as well.
Yes.
And I think Marty Noxon also did stuff from Firefly. So
possibly. No, she was very much Whedon's right-hand woman, I think.
I should know. Great writing, great film. I thought Colin Farrell was just charming. And most importantly, though, I thought David Tennant was just...
Oh, man,
he's a scream.
I think Josh said it on the day. It's if the doctor cut loose and didn't care anymore.
Exactly. It's just really nice just to hear him just swear.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And you know what? It's refreshing because he's always been so reserved because he has to be. And it's just to watch this man just curse like a sailor. Oh, yeah. So good.
So yeah, when it comes out,
mildly arousing. With those horrible rashy freaking leather pants.
Oh, that scene. Oh. So yeah, when it comes out, rush to the cinema to see this. Yes. Don't wait. Yes. And we will review it on the week of its release. So we'll come back to that one on its release. I watched last night a documentary movie that was made for HBO called Superheroes, which is fascinating. It's actually a documentary about the real life people who dress up in costumes and go out in the street.
Oh, I saw clips from this on, I watched The Soup once a week, which is
I love The Soup.
Joel McHale, which you're familiar with, probably familiar with him, and he, you know, watches all the best of television, so we don't have to.
Or worst.
Or worst of television. And that was one of the clips, though, that they showed.
Yeah, well, it's really, really interesting because it ranges from just complete loony bins to one guy who actually thinks he has superpowers. To this little Hispanic guy who basically wants to be a superhero so bad, but he can't even get his white belt in karate. He's got kind of a little pudgy stomach, and you know, and to another group, which are this team of superheroes in New York who actually take it really seriously and are all martial artists, and you know, and all this, and you sit there and go, these people are, and all you can, well, you're watching it, and all you can think is someone is going to die.
Mm.
One of these guys is going to die.
It's the opening scene from Kick-Ass, isn't it?
Pretty much. Well worth having a look at if you get a chance. So so if you find a HBO telemovie called Superheroes, have a look at it. It's it's a one-off special, and it's fascinating.
Yeah, I'll have to watch it.
It is fascinating. Let's move on and do this feature film. What do you think?
Why not?
All right, feature film number one, Conan the Barbarian. All right. Conan the Barbarian, directed by Marcus Remake Man Nispel, and written by Thomas Dean... Oh, well, I got to take a deep breath on this one already. Thomas Dean Donnelly, Joshua Oppenheimer, and Sean Hood, based on characters created by Robert E. Howard. It stars Jason, I want to get into mythical creatures, Momoa, Steven, I'm always the bad guy, Lang, Ron, I survived Uwe Boll Perlman, Rachel, I should have been in Twilight Nichols, and Rose, look at me being evil McGowan.
Nicely done, Steve.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. Nice selection, I like those. Yeah. No,
and according to the ever faithful Anonymous on IMDb, he says, a quest that begins as a personal vendetta for the fierce Cimmerian warrior soon turns into an epic battle against hulking rivals, horrific monsters, and impossible odds as Conan realizes he is the only hope of saving the great nations of Hyboria from an encroaching reign of supernatural evil.
You know that's not anonymous. You know Jason Momoa.
No, because if he said it, he would have said, and getting into mythical creatures. Let's have a look at the trailer. We'll come back to this. Where is it? Oh, God. Do I have the trailer? Yeah, I do. Here it is.
I see a journey. A man
crossing the sands.
A knight.
A warrior. Your paths will merge.
In despair, your new master.
Kala raises the souls of the unspeakably evil.
You're sought to enslave all of Hyboria.
No man shall live in chains.
Yes, come on.
Run from me, and I will tear apart the mountains to find you. I will follow you to hell.
Barbarian!
Okay, guys. Who's going first on this one? Before we go any further, Mike from Canada, from West Canada, says, so in my town, we only have three movies at the cinema this week. Jesus, what size town do you live in? Conan, Spy Kids 4, and Smurfs. Any suggestions?
Well, we've not seen the last two.
Yeah, but I think I could pretty much say...
Spy Kids.
Smurfs.
No, really? But you get a scratch and sniff card for the Spy Kids 4.
I watched the trailer for Spy Kids 4 again last night.
I don't care how bad. It couldn't be possibly as bad as the Smurfs looks.
Well, I'll let you know. I'm seeing Smurfs next
week. I'm seeing Smurfs next week as well.
Why
so.
Are you guys doing that?
Because it's the Smurfs.
It's the Smurfs, and we've got to be able to say, oh, Smurf it.
Watch your mouth.
Okay, who wants to start with Conan?
Nobody wants to
I'm
start
starting
with Conan.
Last because, like, no matter what I say, it's...
All right, I'll start then.
Go.
This was a piece of junk. All right, it was just a giant mess from beginning to end. Well, actually, no, I take that back. The first 5 minutes of this film, I was in. All right, I was there. When he was the young kid and he had to fight those guys in the woods and he took them all on by himself and all that, I thought, okay, Ron Perlman, I could buy Ron Perlman. I was in there for the first 5 minutes. And then when he became Jason Momoa, I was out. All right. Jason Momoa comes across like a Maui surfer dude carrying a sword. Really doesn't come across as very bright, but that's okay. He's playing a barbarian. You know, that's fine. But then he's surrounded by Stephen Lang basically looking like, I'm collecting a paycheck. Look at me. I'm being a bad guy. Rose McGowan basically going, look at me. Aren't I evil?
But she's really not.
She's not.
Really
she's trying so hard.
Yeah.
And I think Richard summed it up best when you said that the little girl who plays her character in the opening scene was awful.
Yes.
And you know, could only get better from there. But you think, no, she was just paving the way for the Rose McGowan performance, which was just awful. And look, I don't even mind Rose McGowan normally. I mean, she's not a brilliant actress, but, you know. She was okay in the Rodriguez Grindhouse film, you know.
Death Proof.
No, other one.
Oh, the other one, sorry.
Planet of Terror.
Planet
of Terror. You know, she was okay in that. You know, she was okay in Charmed when Charmed was on. It was a pretty crappy show. But she
was fun.
It was fun. She was okay, you know. But she's awful in this, you know. And then let's not even talk about the Rachel Nichols girl.
No.
She was a valley girl, you know. It's like, and worse than her was the support players when they first cut to that temple. And there's the blonde bimbo who goes, what are we doing now, master?
I like the old dude in the temple. He comes in and goes, here, I got a whole lot of exposition for you. And I got to get out of here in 5 minutes now. What do you think about this?
It's like, we got to get this through on the running time so we can make another session. So I was really, I sat there going, oh, this is just a mess from beginning to end. The 3D conversion was awful. It was muddy and brown. I think you
it's
summed
a
up
big
my
brown mess.
Big brown mess. It was the action. Marcus Nispel cannot direct an action
it's
scene.
It's funny
because
he shoots like 3,000 different camera angles and sort of slices it together so fast. He must think that no one can tell that he's making mistakes.
Yeah, what it says to me is this is a director who doesn't know how to shoot it, so he surrounds it in cameras and goes, we'll cut it together later.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. And it's just like there are whole scenes where you're like, how did you get from the side of the truck to the... And like you'll have scenes where two things will be side by side and then the next shot will have them from a distance from a different camera angle like 2 meters apart. And you're like... The continuity here is disturbing me.
Yeah, and look, they were pushing for the R rating. They said from the very offset, we're going to make an R rated film, not actually understanding that it's not just the mere fact that we want an R rating on the film. We want that film to actually deserve to be a grown up movie that we can all enjoy. So in this case, to get the R rating, he says, well, we need boobs. So he rescues some slave girls at the very beginning who are topless, and then we proceed for the next 15 minutes of the film to have them all wandering around topless for no apparent reason. And we go, okay, well, there's our boob quantity, our boob quotient. And then for the violence, John Milius actually said something really, really clever, which I really liked. He's directed the original Conan the Barbarian. He directed Red Dawn. He's directed a lot of violent films. But he actually said he abhors violence. Right? And he actually said that he abhors violence for violence's sake. He said he doesn't mind shooting violence if the film calls for the violence, right? He's like, when he made Conan, it was considered a very violent film, but it was about barbarians. It was going to be a violent film, you know? In this, it's almost like they went, well, we're going for the R rating, so we've got to make it really violent. No, so rather than smashing his head on the ground, we'll smash his head on the ground 4 times and make the blood spray out across the ground.
In 3D.
And you sit there and go, you really didn't need to do that.
The problem with this, man, is that it's a producer's wet dream again. Like, I mean, you can tell that somebody sat down and gone, how do we win people over? And they've just tried in every way to try and push for the best of whatever they can. And the funny thing is they've missed...
Best or most?
Well...
The most of what they can get.
Yeah, no, and my big problem with this film is that it leaves out and fucks up some of the easiest and most important parts of this film.
Absolutely.
Like, can I just explain that Conan the Barbarian storylines usually are not that difficult? It's like, essentially, he goes somewhere to get something, usually attaches to a girl at some stage along the storyline, and somehow ends up saving the world. Like, these are basic storylines. We got this right in the 80s. This is the sort of thing you need to get started and finished beforehand, because if you're missing that, we all start getting confused before we even start getting into all this stuff. The violence is so much that I think one of my friends said it the best. He was like, by about the quarter mark, I was just numbed.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's just like, he was like, I didn't care anymore about the violence. I just wanted to get to the end of the film.
It was literally, look, I don't mind violence. I don't mind a violent movie. I don't mind, none of this bothers me. Mm. I just look at it and go, it's pointless.
Yeah.
And that's what worries me more than it being violent. It's just all pointless violence. Mm. You know, once again, it's an exercise in extremes.
Yeah.
You know, we're just going to, if we're going to cut somebody's head off, we're going to cut it off. We're going to slice it five times and have jets of blood scream up into the air, you know, because we can.
You know? And, you know, that can work. I mean, we talk about genre-bending films, and I think, you know, a lot of Japanese, a lot of Asian cinema does this torrents of blood kind of thing.
Oh,
like
13 Assassins.
13 Assassins. Takeshi Miike's stuff is great at this, but it's
Lone Wolf and Cub.
Yeah, Lone Wolf and Cub. Yeah. All those sorts of movies where it's just torrents of blood, and it's hilarious, though, in that context, because it's over the top, and they know it's over the top, and
no
it's actually...
No one
takes it seriously, but it's also tempered by a decent story at the centre of it. 13 Assassins, which I'm sure you guys will talk about in a couple of weeks' time when it comes out in Australia, is... a masterpiece, just as violent as Conan the Barbarian.
Probably more so, actually.
Probably more so. I mean, they're explosions.
A more disturbing violence as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, but you don't get numb to it in that way because it's not all the same
it
thing.
It shocks you, yeah.
Yeah, and the thing is, you're seeing the violence, you're seeing the abhorrent behavior, which drives the characters.
Well, we talked about Fright Night at the top of the show. I mean, that's a film we all saw this week. Has some very serious... It's another solid R rating. Has some very serious violence in it. Except we all said there were points where we just went... You know, it really does shock you. There are comical shocks in there, but there are genuine shocks in there. Conan is nothing but a unmitigated disaster from start to finish. Yeah. I mean, except for that, as you said, that those opening scenes with the kid... Yeah. Quite good. Because it gets to the core of what the Conan story is about. What I liked about the original ones. I haven't seen Destroyer for quite some time. But
Destroyer is actually not very good.
No,
Barbarian is a great film. Destroyer kind of went off in its own path. They tried to make it a PG-rated film.
Right,
and so it basically they tried to up the humor, cut the violence back, and it destroyed the film.
But that clip
no pun intended.
Yeah. Well, that clip you paid at the top of the show of you know, and view the lamentations of the women. That's exactly why I love the original Conan. Hmm. It's silly and it's 80s stuff, but it's actually, as you said, it's a proper adult fantasy film, which we very rarely get these days.
We know it was a language issue at the time, but it worked because Arnold Schwarzenegger barely opens his mouth in the first Conan. And if you read Robert E. Howard's books, he's described as a man of very few words, right? And that's what works in this situation. This is why you have these beautiful operatic score in Conan, because it actually helps drive the narrative because the character's not talking. Mm. You know what I mean? Momoa opens his mouth too much. He tries to crack wisecracks. He tries to, you know, it's like, and he sits there and goes, no, that's not Conan. Mm. You know? The only time he ever felt like Conan to me was when he actually was on a horseback and he went, woman, come here. That's the only time where you go, yeah, that's Conan.
Yeah, it's misogynistic, but it worked. It was the spirit of Conan. And it totally, in those few rare moments, it totally got what Conan was about. Mm. But, and I think in some ways, I mean, I wrote this in my review this week, but it's no point in comparing it to the original. There's no point in comparing it to the source material because it completely fails on its own merits.
Well, it's also not based on any source material. This is it's the other problem that I have with this film. It's a problem I have with the original film, but at least the original film was a little bit more faithful. Filmmakers, for some reason, love this character and refuse to trust the source material because none of the Conan films made to this date have actually been based on any of Robert E. Howard's books. They're based on the character, and then they go off and they go do their own thing. And you sit there and go,
the
material.
Well, look, the adventures of Conan aren't necessarily, you know, you can take him anywhere and put him anywhere because, like I said, the story is always the same and always will be.
Hey, there we go.
Eventually. Yeah. Eventually it'll
Conan
happen.
X.
Yeah. And look, I mean, these sort of things don't bother me, but the problem with it is that they always seem to screw up the world because they seem to misunderstand the concept of the barbarian. It's like everybody plays him as this incredibly misogynistic, you know, kind of a character and all this sort of stuff, whereas it's like everyone in that world is tough. Like,
and this is what they did get right in the first film.
Yes.
Because Valeria is a tough, kick-ass chick. Yeah,
absolutely. You know? And this is what I'm saying. In this one, it's just almost insulting. Mm. Like, it's actually mildly disturbing how they put it in. And it's like him being like, woman, come here, and her not coming and all this sort of stuff. It's just this weird, unnecessary, like, why is that even there? Yeah. Like, it's like everyone in this world has survived in their own way. The you know, magic people have, you know, they're tough that way. The chicks are warriors, you know, like this is the way that the world works. It's like this just felt silly.
It's really frustrating because I wanted to like this film. I like the character. I like, you know, Jason Momoa is actually quite good in Game of Thrones, playing basically the same character. In fact, speaking less, which makes it even better. You know, I wanted to like this film. I'm watching the trailer, you go, the special effects look okay, you know? It's all just a little bit overproduced, a little bit overblown. But all the way going into the screening this week, I just had a sinking feeling in my gut. You just sit there going, I just have a real... You know, it's that line from Star Wars, you know, where you sit there and go...
I got a bad feeling about this,
you know? Yeah. And all the way in, and when it started, and it started to go downhill after the first 10 minutes, you go, oh, here it comes, you know? And I was just really... And I said this from the very first trailer, I said... I'm worried about this. I want to like this, but I'm worried about this. But to put this into context, it is right there up in the same league as the Clash of the Titans remake, you know? And it's really scary to say, but I think I like Clash of the Titans better.
You know, I compare it to two other films that came out this year. The first is Battle Los Angeles. The second is Sucker Punch. Two films I hated. I easily went into my bottom five for the year.
See, I actually didn't hate Battle Los Angeles.
Battle Los Angeles I hated because it had the same problem. It was just mindless violence for the sake of it. And it's sort of analogous to playing a video game. No, actually, no, that's unfair. It's analogous to watching somebody else play a video game.
It was like watching somebody play Call of Duty. Absolutely.
And you want, so, dude, can you hand me the controller? I want to have a go. No, you're going to watch for 2 hours while I play this game. Or having like a really long cutscene that never lets you interact. That's what... the violence in Conan's like, and that's what I felt about Battle Los Angeles as well. And I think you reminded me on the night what I'd said about Sucker Punch, which was that he's a director who understands that all these things are cool, but has no understanding as to why they're cool.
Nispel does
this over and over and over again. He takes all these films that were cool from previous eras. He did Texas Chainsaw Massacre. He did
Friday the
13th. Two films that were defining in their own time for various reasons. Because they were of their time and they totally tapped into a zeitgeist at that moment. He's not doing that here. No. He's kind of...
He hasn't done that with any of his
films.
He's
missing the point completely. Yeah.
And like with this film, you're saying he goes, that will be cool, but not knowing why. So like Conan will walk along and just spin his sword.
Yeah.
And you go... Why?
And shove it into the dirt.
How many times has he shoved it into the dirt and then just pulled it out again?
Every single time someone's talking about Conan in the third person, like talking about Conan, you look over and he's leaning on his sword and looking at them. It's like this guy is the vainest man on earth.
And how many times could he do the Power of Grayskull move? Lifting his sword into the sky.
Took my ear off of that.
You sit there and go, really? You're doing it again? Why are you doing that? You know, the first 4 times you did it, lightning didn't strike it and you didn't turn into He-Man. So maybe you give this up at this point. I'm going to go out on a limb and say I don't recommend you pay your cinema dollars for this one because it really just is flat. It's just... And you know what? And it's something I said to Nicholas. The problem I had with the Conan film, most important above all else, is that it's not one of those films where you get angry at or you get disgusted by or anything else. It's just blatantly mediocre in every way. And that's the problem. Mediocrity is the worst. And you just sit there and you just go, it's blah. There's nothing to it. There's no character development. There's no energy. The battle scenes are lackluster. The visual effects are okay, but they're all lost in this muddy 3D. You know, and so you just sit there and like the pit monster with all the tentacles, you go, I've seen this in Lord of the Rings. It's like, you know, it just felt so derivative and so flat and just so mediocre. And you just walk out and just go, bah. That's all there is to it. So look, save your money, especially in a 3D screening. This thing is not worth $23 to go see in Australian 3D cinemas. It's not worth it.
No, I agree, man. Absolute waste of money. I mean, like, I had so much fun at the time, but it was all making fun of the movie. And I think if I had have paid for it, don't think it would have been the same
situation. No, I think if you paid for it, you probably would have been a little bit angry. Yeah. That's the thing.
Oh, I'm usually pretty angry, especially with ticket prices as high as they are.
I mean, we can walk out of this and we can go, it's really mediocre. But luckily, we can then give you a balanced review that save you your money. Because if you pay for this, especially if you go with your partner and you get parking and you've gone out for dinner and you go see this, you're going to be really disappointed. Oh,
dude, but what it lacks in, you might get your money's worth. What it lacks in structure or plot or
makes up in boobies.
It makes up for in boobies, but it makes up for in volume, because it's about almost 2 hours long.
That's true.
And it's a lot, and that is why it's so numbing, like, because it's just after that first 10 minutes of actual plot.
Do you know what it is? I think Paul Greengrass set the bar really high for that really snappy cutting action style scenes. But he understands how it all fits together. The choreography is so tight that he knows exactly how to shoot it. All these young hotshot directors who come along and go, oh, I can do that. They don't get it.
No.
And they, as we said, they throw a million cameras around it and then they go, we'll cut it together.
There's a difference, because if you look at Greengrass is so military in a mindset that when he shoots these scenes, there is no loss of continuity or anything, because every scene is just how it should be. Because
another film that did this was Eagle Eye, if you remember Eagle Eye, which was the Caruso film. There's a car chase in the middle of that film where I was sitting at the cinema and I actually lost track of whose car was whose. And there's all these cars crashing and I'm going, what the hell just happened? And then they drive out of the mess and you go, I'm sorry, if I lost track of who's going where, then the action scene failed.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, you've got to be able to keep track of your hero. And Conan does this all the time. They'll be fighting and people are falling right, left, and center. And you go, didn't he just die?
Yeah.
Now he's standing it, but I thought I saw him die. And it's like it's all over the place, you know? So, yeah, I just, you know, Marcus Nispel, really, go away. Or stop remaking stuff.
I'm looking forward to the sequel to Conan, though, when he gets more into mythical creatures. We want to get into mythical creatures.
Mike from Canada is leaving us. See you later, Mike. I know it's late over there, isn't it? All right, we've got a second feature film review. Oh, I cut you guys off. I'm not. No, we all didn't recommend it. That's right.
Nobody
go see this.
Me not going to go see.
Now, the second feature film review, unfortunately, Josh hasn't had a chance to see yet. So,
which is cool, because I'll be asking you all sorts of questions.
Please
about
do.
It.
You're welcome to it. Now, the second film we're going to review this week is Cowboys and Aliens.
Yeah. Spoiler, it has cowboys and aliens.
Yeah, not since... Oh. Not
fuck, man. I'm going to see this film.
I'm sorry. There's no ampersand, though. There's no and. Like, I thought there was going to be, like, a giant ampersand in the middle of the town.
No.
And the aliens and the cowboys would meet at it. No.
No.
That so pissed me off.
Sure, you know, that's false advertising right now.
So I think not since, we've talked about this last week, not since the assassination of Jesse James by the coward
Robert Ford
has a film so clearly stated on the box what this film is about. So Cowboys and Alien, directed by John.
I think that they should have that, like, as the, you know, the little cigarette symbol. Yeah. They should have that down the bottom. Warning: may contain aliens and cowboys.
Directed by John Favreau.
Will not contain ampersands.
And written
by. Man, I'm done.
All right, now I'm going to take a deep breath, because this is even more than Conan.
Oh, Jesus.
Roberto Ortsi, Alex Kurtzman, Damon Lindelof, Mark Fergus, and Hawk Ottsby, based on the Platinum Studios comic by Scott Mitchell Rosenberg. And when we say based on, really loosely based.
It took the title.
It took the title and the cowboys and the aliens.
That's true.
That's about
and
it.
And the ampersand.
And the ampersand. The film stars Daniel Craig, Harrison Ford, Olivia Wilde. Wait a minute. Oh, I've lost my mouse. See, I can't do these things fast and my mouse disappears. Olivia Wilde. Okay. Sam Rockwell. Paul. Now, is it Dano?
I always said Dano. I always said Dano, but it's probably Dano.
Who knows? Paul Dano, whatever. Noah Ringer. And for those who don't know who Noah Ringer is, he was Aang, the Last Airbender.
Ah, of course.
Wow. And he's a terrible actor, and he's not much better in this. And Mr. Krabs. No, I'm sorry. That's Clancy Brown.
You mean the Kurgan.
The Kurgan, that's right. It's so nice to see Clancy Brown back on
screen. Oh, absolutely.
I love Clancy Brown. All right, this is a slightly longer synopsis, but this comes directly from their official site. So, which I love because they say 1875, and yet everything I've read on it says 1873.
Okay.
So they're saying 1875.
It's a long movie.
It's a long movie. It goes for 2 years. New Mexico Territory, a stranger with no memory of his past stumbles into the hard desert town of Absolution. What he discovers is that the people of Absolution don't welcome strangers, and nobody makes a move on its streets unless ordered to do so by the Iron Fist. Colonel Dollarhide. By the way, the dictation software I use for writing reviews did not know how to deal with Dollarhide. No. It's a town that lives in fear, but Absolution is about to experience fear it can scarcely comprehend as the desolate city is attacked by marauders from the sky. Now the stranger they rejected is their only hope for salvation, as this gunslinger slowly starts to remember who he is and where he's been. He realizes he holds a secret that could give the town a fighting chance against the alien force. And as I say, that comes directly from, funnily enough, Universal, who are actually the producers of the film, because it's distributed by Paramount here, but Universal produced it. And here is the trailer.
I woke up in the desert like I've been dropped out of the sky. You got a name?
I don't know.
I'm gonna need you to come with us.
Wouldn't do that if I was you.
Yeah, that's Lonergan, boss.
I want that man. You give him to me now.
I need to know where you came from.
So do I.
You don't remember anything. Survivors. It's what they did to my people.
I've seen good men do bad things. Bad men do good things. You go get our people back.
They're here.
Should we step in? Looks like he's doing fine.
God damn.
Damn. All right. Okay. Now, we are going to go against the grain here, I think, Richard.
Absolutely. Oh,
because this film has been lambasted by the critics, including some of our colleagues who have just basically just shattered it. And I got to say, I really enjoyed it.
I don't know what movie they saw.
For starters, no film that contains Sam Rockwell can be bad. No. It's actually stipulated in a contract that was made by some higher power than us. It's like, if he's in the film, even if it's under par, it's still going to be a good film because he's in it. So there you go. There's one reason why the film
can't
be bad.
This is the first Sam Rockwell film I've seen where he's not shown his ass, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think every film I've seen in this.
No,
he
didn't show his ass in Galaxy Quest.
Didn't he?
No.
Oh, okay.
That's true, yeah.
That's two films now.
Yeah. There
you go. Hunt them down if you can find them. They're rare.
All right. So, look, the heaviest criticism against this film has been against its script.
Yes.
They basically say that there's no character development and it's just, you know, what are some of the complaints? That I've lost track now.
Oh, a lot of people are, for some reason, people expect this to be a comedy, I think, because they're saying it's not fun enough. And
If you go through the Rotten Tomatoes reviews, they actually say, oh, you know, I was looking for more camp. I was looking, you know, it should be more fun. And I don't know, nowhere in this trailer does it look like it's a comedy.
No.
Nowhere in the marketing at all has it looked like it was supposed to be fun or camp.
Yeah.
It looks like they were playing it dead straight, and that's exactly what they did. What you end up with is a really good adventure film, you know?
Yeah.
What you were going to say?
Oh, there's so many other reviews on here refer to it as dull or dry or something. So I don't know what movie they saw.
No,
there's nothing. This film is an action-packed film with cowboys and freaking aliens, man. Yeah. It's a fun sci-fi
and
slash
I don't know
Western.
About you guys, but I wasn't looking for deep story. I wasn't looking for deep characters. I was looking for cowboys to go kick alien butt. That's what
I
was
looking
for.
Spoilers. That kind of happens.
Yeah, it kind of happens. You know? It kind of has cowboys on horseback and aliens in spaceships and they fight.
Yeah.
You know?
And you know what? Fantastic. I mean, I like you guys. I mean, that's what I kind of want out of this film. I mean, I think people went into it wanting another Iron Man.
Yeah, I don't know what they were expecting. Yeah, no.
Yeah, no. Everybody just seems to expect the budget higher than God and, you know, sort of like deep, you know, important storyline. And like, it's the problem with all these comic movies. It's like you either get the people that watch these sort of things and go, oh, it wasn't faithful to the source material, or the people that just enjoy it and have
I can actually
time.
Honestly say it's far better than its source material. The comic book, the Platinum Dudes comic book, is really silly. It's really awful.
Really dated as well.
It's really dated. It was written in it was written in 90 something. And it just feels like an 80s style comic book. The aliens are like superhero. They're like Skrull. They're like superhero aliens. The cowboy, the discussion with the cowboy, the conversations and stuff. I mean, we're talking about no character building. There's no character building here. You know, they're all just stereotypical gunslingers, you know? There's no depth to this. And there's actually a long sordid history to this comic book as well. If you go back, you find out that it was a real rush job. They were just trying to knock it off. So, you know, you just kind of look at it and go, I think at this point, divorce it from its original source material. Look at it from what this film actually achieves, which is a, you know, lone gunslinger comes in a la Clint Eastwood style into a rough town. The town gets invaded and they all have to join forces to go kick alien ass. That's it. That's the story.
And this is the thing. It's a solid Western at the start of this. And I love my Western. So this is probably, I was half sold on this already. But the thing is, rather than trying to do this kind of spastic mashup that maybe people thought it was going to be, it's actually a solid Western that happens to have aliens in it.
Yeah.
And this is what I love about the movie. They actually grounded it in a proper Western universe.
Do you think
and then
maybe,
just chucked aliens
do
in.
You think maybe this could be one of the reasons why it's kind of being looked at like that? Because if you're not a real fan of Westerns as a genre, you're not really aware that they're actually usually really simple films.
Somebody actually, I read a review on it where they actually criticized it saying, and even the Indian characters aren't very well developed. And you go, they're not usually in Westerns.
No.
Because in 1875, the Indians were the bad guys.
Absolutely.
You know, it's like, so you look at it and go, take it within context of the time it is set. Not all films can be completely politically correct by our today's standards. It doesn't work that way, you know? Yeah. It's like Mad Men, they're smoking like chimneys. We don't put that on screen, but that's what they were doing in the 60s. You know what I mean? So
look, it's got the pacing of a Western, which maybe throws a few people off, but everything about this film I really enjoyed. I really found, I thought the characters were actually really good characters because they were straight out of a Western. I think it's really interesting, actually, too, that they mashed up Westerns and sci-fis in this way, because, you know, a lot of people will know the history of cinema. The Western was the god of films right up until about the 50s. It was the American form of filmmaking. It was the one film that America had to offer the rest of the world. In the 50s, sort of post-nuclear age, sci-fi did take over from the Western in a lot of ways. And we started getting a lot of alien stories. And then by the 70s, you kind of had your blockbuster taking over, you know, both of these kind of schlocky things. This is a blockbuster that combines the best of the Western genre and the best of the sci-fi genre. And I honestly cannot see what people would find disappointing about this.
Yeah, this is not a Western like Unforgiven. This is a Western like Silverado or Pale Rider or one of those 80s style Westerns. It's got the right pacing. It's got the right style.
Hell, it's even like the 50s style Westerns.
Oh, the 50s style Westerns. Absolutely. And then you throw in this opposing force. And, you know, there's criticism that wouldn't they be more surprised by the fact that they were flying aliens? Maybe, but who cares? You know, these are tough cattle ranchers who are basically saying, you know, something. And one of them actually says at one point, maybe they're demons. And he says, don't be ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's It's like, yeah. So I think at that point you sit there and go, okay, we're ready to suspend disbelief at this point and say, okay, they're going to accept that there's something weird going on here. They don't know what it is, but there's something weird going on here. Yeah, you know,
it's like people that started abusing Transformers because, you know, they didn't have a realistic enough means of travel or stuff like that. Have you ever gotten to a conversation with someone like that, or like, oh, you know, it wasn't very realistic that they just flew from their planet down to Earth? And you're like, it's a movie about giant
robots.
Freaking robots from space
that can turn into cars.
Yeah, how seriously are you really taking this? And it's the same sort of thing here. It's like, you can't.
Freak in our chat room says they were probably expecting something along the lines of Independence Day. Yeah, that maybe. Could, yeah, that could be a possibility.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
They might have been looking for world destruction, and it's not that.
That's the thing, and
it's actually a very small story.
Well, people forget until kind of like the mid-90s with Independence Day, alien invasions were quite small scale in the films. They were usually taking over a small town somewhere with a bunch of people who had to band together. And that was, they're great films because that's kind of, we got the zombie tradition out of that.
The whole
well.
Worldwide domination thing kind of came around in the 80s with V.
V, absolutely.
You know, and it was from that point on as we went, you know, they can take over the whole planet in one go. You know?
And then, you know, and then by the mid-90s, they were blowing up the White House kind of thing.
Absolutely.
And I think in the last couple of years, we've had them, you know, Los Angeles has been blown up about 3 or 4 times in Battle Los Angeles and Skyline and so forth.
Yeah.
We don't mention Skyline anymore.
No. And I can't mention Battle Los Angeles twice.
That is the film that
should
not be mentioned. Oh, man, that film, I swear. Look, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say I recommend this. And you know what? It's in glorious 2D.
Yes.
Yeah.
Glorious 2D, beautifully photographed. Action scenes are well handled. You actually know what's going on in the action scenes. Look, I really liked it. And it was really nice seeing Harrison Ford on screen again. Actually delivering something.
Yeah, no, he look, everyone was good in this. Absolutely everyone.
You want to know what it is? He's back in his element because, like, ever since kind of, you know, the 80s ended, like, he went off and tried to do all these films that were him, you know, sort of like trying to really act and push really hard. And it's like, realistically, he is at home in a film that isn't taking itself too seriously, or something like a thriller or something like that. It's like, the man isn't meant for, you know, drama or anything like that. This is his game.
The other movie he was in this year was Morning Glory, which was a romantic comedy where he played a disgruntled like talk show host.
So real stretch.
So real stretch. Yeah. Yeah.
And the whole film, everybody's like, "What?"
Look, I live with a woman who loves romantic dramas and romantic comedies, and I didn't hate Morning Glory, but it's just there's nothing to it. Yep. You know,
no, it's
just,
I mean, it felt uncomfortable.
Yeah, I mean, the best thing in that film was Rachel McAdams,
absolutely,
because she's worth watching in anything. But the film just doesn't kind of work.
Just like Olivia Wilde.
Olivia Wilde, you say? Okay.
There it is.
You should just have like a quick button on your keyboard for that.
I should. I think Olivia Wilde's going to have to leave the keyboard. Now, we got an email. We're going to throw this one in right now. We got an email from Matt who said, "Hey, Dave, here a very short sket with Harrison Ford on the Jimmy Kimmel live show as a promo for Cowboys and Aliens. It was very funny, and you might have seen it. I've actually got it here if you want to see it.
Sure.
This is a little promo that was done on Jimmy Kimmel.
So it's called what? Air Force 1-2. That's good. And they take over the plane again, right? Great. I love it. As long as I can make the deal. Come in. Kenny, kennel up. What are you doing here, you son of a bitch? Oh, cut the shit. You think you can walk in here and say you're sorry after what you did? I'm done with that Star Wars crap, and I'm done with you. Haven't you heard? I'm in Cowboys and Aliens. Daniel Craig's my Wookiee bitch now. Get the hell out of here. Out. Get out! Out of here! Get out! I don't want to talk to you. Get out of here! She was my wife! She's still spitting up hairballs.
All right. So that was Harrison Ford on Jimmy Kimmel promoting Cowboys and Aliens, which I thought was very cute. Thank you, Matt, for sending that in. Look, I'm going to say to you that if you want a film to watch this weekend, go see Cowboys and Aliens.
Damn,
avoid
straight.
Conan and just have some fun. But of course, if you haven't seen Rise of the Planet of the Apes, go see that above all else.
For sure.
I think if you go to Cowboys and Aliens expecting a film that is an action film about cowboys and aliens, and that's all, you're going to have fun with this film. Just enjoy it.
Nice. That's, you know, all I want.
Absolutely.
Hear.
If you're looking for anything deeper than that, you're probably not going to find it. But, you know, it's a good as I wrote in my review, it's a rollicking good ride.
It is a rollicking good ride. That's not on the poster.
It's not a check.
I noticed in the newspaper on yesterday or on Thursday, the ads for Cowboys and Aliens had no quotes on them.
I noticed that today. I actually sent an email to the PR company saying, in a sea of bad reviews, here's mine.
Yeah, I did the same as well. It didn't make it onto the poster.
I said, you might want to have a look at this. All right. So, yes, Richard and I say go see it. So, Josh, go see it. All right.
Will do.
Excellent. We only have a couple of news stories this week because we had two films to do. So we're only keeping this really short. I wasn't going to put any news in at all, but these two stories kind of cropped up I thought we really needed to talk about this. First of all, it came out this week that Ridley Scott is planning a new Blade Runner film. And everybody got very, very excited about this because he's doing Prometheus, which is basically a new Alien film, and now he's going to do a new Blade Runner film. But then the plot thickened just a little bit because one of the producers of the proposed sequel came out and basically said that it won't have Harrison Ford. It wouldn't be anything to do with the original Blade Runner. It's basically just going into the Blade Runner universe.
Perfect.
Which is perfect. Mm. I'm absolutely down with that. Now, where is it? He actually has a quote here. It says, "In no way do I speak for Ridley Scott." This is, who are we talking about here? What's his name again? I always forget his name.
Let's call him Dave. Steve.
Andrew Kossoff. Mm-hmm. All right, Andrew Kossoff. He says, "In no way do I speak for Ridley Scott, but if you're asking me, will this movie have anything to do with Harrison Ford? The answer is no. This is a total reinvention, and in my mind, that means doing everything fresh, including casting."
Mm.
So as long as we're in that, basically that universe, that Ridley Scott universe.
But if you take what he kind of says there, he says, don't take my word on it because I'm not really have anything to say about this. Yeah. But in my opinion, it wouldn't have any of this. It's like, that doesn't mean anything. It's
apparently,
a non-statement.
A writer they're seeking a writer right now to actually put this together.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, absolutely.
We're available if you're interested.
I think Ridley Scott started doing Prometheus going, sci-fi is cool again. Yeah. You know? He hasn't directed a sci-fi since 82. So I think he's basically going, let's do this.
He's probably got a whole bunch of new toys to play with, but no, I think that and don't forget, he said it was he who said he'll never work outside of 3D again.
Yeah.
So expect a 3D Blade Runner film.
Oh.
you know, when I was putting the story on my site the other day, I was looking at images from Blade Runner again, and this is such a deep world.
Oh,
you know,
I love it.
Almost every frame of that film has got, you know, 1,000 other stories that it could potentially tell.
Yep.
So it was such a fully realized universe.
Oh,
as
it's
well.
Brilliant! And look, I recommend to anybody, if they haven't seen it, look at the Dangerous Days documentary that comes with the final cut, which is literally a 2-hour documentary on the making of this film, and it is so in depth. Yeah. About what he had to go through.
Oh, absolutely.
And it really gives you a real respect for Ridley Scott because the man takes crap from no one. Studio execs would walk in and basically say, you're over budget, rip pages out. And he'd go, no. Yep. Walk away. You know?
You can't argue with a man like that. How do you win that conversation? He just walks away from you.
So, I'm excited about this. I love the Blade Runner world.
Absolutely.
And I was saying to Richard before the show, there was actually a comic written recently of Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, which is literally... every word from the book put into a comic book.
Yep.
And it's really good. And they actually wrote a sequel to that called Ashes to Ashes. And I was thinking, wouldn't it be interesting to actually do that as your follow-up film?
That doesn't have Deckard in it, does it?
I don't think so.
No. That would
but
be
yes, for Blade Runner fans, don't forget Deus Ex is coming up. And and as someone who's had a little bit of hands-on time with it, just let me say, it is Blade Runner, but you get to play it. And that's awesome.
Do you guys remember the Blade Runner RPG?
Hell yes.
That was a great game.
Yeah.
Though it was more of a point and click.
Yeah,
really.
Of course. Yeah.
I'm not, and in no way do I mean that as a discouraging factor. I'm just saying, just be aware.
That was Westwood did that, didn't they?
Yes.
Yeah. That was fantastic.
I really enjoyed that game.
Yeah, me too. Job. It was like just playing out the movie. It was playing out a new movie because it was a new character.
Absolutely.
I like that.
Which is what they could do potentially.
Yeah, absolutely. And now the other piece of news that came up this week was Man of Steel related, and we have Man of Steel here. Where is he? There he is, the Man of Steel himself. Now, we talked about his costume last week. This week, a synopsis actually came out.
Get out.
So we actually finally know what this film is going to be about.
Superman.
yes, it can be about a man in his tights and his cape.
Yeah.
Now, according to the synopsis on, what is this? Voices from Krypton.
It's comic book
movie.com. It was actually a casting call. Warner Bros. Put out a casting sheet for various people. And in that casting sheet was the synopsis. And so you go, whoop, this is kind of official. All right. Mm. So it says, in the pantheon of superheroes, Superman is the most recognized and revered character of all time. Clark Kent / Kal-El, played by Cavill, is a young 20-something journalist who feels alienated by powers beyond anyone's imagination. Transported to Earth years ago from Krypton, an advanced alien planet, Clark struggles with the ultimate question, why am I here? Shaped by the values of his adopted parents, Martha and Jonathan Kent, Clark soon discovers that having super abilities means making very difficult decisions. But when the world needs stability the most, it comes under attack. Will his abilities be used to maintain peace or ultimately be used to divide and conquer?
I'm thinking peace.
Clark must become the hero known as Superman, not only to shine as the world's last beacon of hope, but to protect the ones he loves. Now, in reading this, it suddenly occurred to me that I know what this is based on, or it could be based on one of two source materials. Mm. The one I think it is J. Michael Straczynski's Superman Earth One, which is basically about a 20-something-year-old Clark wandering around the planet, not knowing what he wants to do with his life. He has the Superman suit. His mother makes it for him, but he won't wear it, and he keeps it in a bag, and he just doesn't know what to do. And so he's trying to discover. And then an alien invasion takes place,
right.
And he basically has to make the decision to finally come out of the closet, so to speak, and be Superman. I have a feeling this is what it might be based on, because this is all about, and the Martha, and like we were talking about the origin story aspect of it, all of the stuff with Martha and Jonathan Kent is all like flashbacks and stuff like that. So it's all about him thinking about where he came from and so forth. Now, in Earth One, the bad guy is actually not a Kryptonian. The bad guy, the concept of this is that there were actually two planets around the red sun of Krypton. When the red sun blew up, some survivors from the other planet also made their way off of it, and they've come to Earth to kill the last descendant of Krypton, because they blame Krypton for the destruction of their world. Right. So they have superpowers and everything else. Now, in the film, it's General Zod. So it looks like they've kind of manipulated it to say that it's a Kryptonian who's shown up. Anyway, that's my suspicion. This is completely me talking out of my ass, and it might not be this at all, but I've read this book, and this book is so close to that synopsis.
No, that sounds a lot closer. I thought it might have been based a little bit on Birthright, the Mark Waid story, because that also deals with a Superman wandering the Earth trying to discover who he is. And there might be elements of both, because Birthright was sort of DC said this is now our official origin story of Superman. But of course,
that's changing again.
That's changed again for two reasons. One, because of the court case with
Schuster and Siegel.
And they've had to take back a lot of the early origin story stuff of Superman, because it's no longer DC Comics to use. But also DC Comics next month completely rebooting their entire universe.
Yeah, but I'm saying with the complete reboot of the character, apparently they're not allowed to use the Krypton origin
absolutely.
Story. So I don't know what they're going to do. Have you seen the pictures of him? There's a picture of him released. Yeah. He's actually wearing what looks like a T-shirt with the S on it and this little dicky little cape, literally like a half cape. It's very odd looking. It really is. Because I think they lost the rights to that costume as well. Yeah. The actual costume.
So he just came into our universe and went to a comic book shop and bought a
little dicky suit.
Little t-shirt.
That was for like a 10-year-old or something. Yeah. I don't know. But so look, the reboot of the DC world is going to happen next month. September 1st is when it starts.
Yeah,
so
pretty much.
I
need to get my pre-orders in.
Flashpoint is running its course right now. Flashpoint is like this big event DC's having, which is kind of cleaning up the universe. Mm. And the events of Flashpoint will lead into the reboot. Mm. And what is it? 52 characters.
52 brand new issue ones.
Yeah.
Including, so if you've ever wanted to own Action Comics number one or Superman number one,
I'm disappointed though. I got to tell you, I was looking through the list. I'm very disappointed because I'm a big fan of the Power Girl, the current Power Girl comic, and she's not being rebooted.
No.
She's not on the 52. So I don't know that means they're just keeping her going or whether they're canning her.
My understanding is it's just all these new titles with the brand new titles and some really interesting ones in there. There's like a Western Tales type one as well, which sort of aims to bring back all that stuff. That same sort of the book that introduced Jonah Hex to the world way back when. Mm. They're going to have things like that. They've also brought John Constantine into the DCU and Swamp Thing. So
Swamp Thing was already there.
But John Constantine, who has been in
Vertigo.
Vertigo's line for ages. He's now part of the DCU. So.
Although, to be fair, Constantine actually appears in the most recent. This is really geek stuff, guy. Mm. But in the most recent series of Zatanna.
Yeah, because they reintroduced him as part of the Brightest Day.
Right, because he comes to visit her at one point, and you see them go, that's kind of jarring.
It was a big reveal.
My only problem with this is Vertigo does very dark stuff. DC doesn't, and that's what worries me.
The lines are still going to be separate. Yeah,
Vertigo's still going.
They're bringing
oh,
in.
Oh, no, but they're bringing that's what I'm
in
saying.
Select characters.
If they're bringing him in, though, they're not going to have the same world.
No, but they might be running an alternate Vertigo line as well. So they'll have him toned down for DC and then have him hardcore in Vertigo.
He'll appear. Fucking so at better. Least they know the worlds do connect, which is great. Now, Vertigo's doing some great stuff at the moment, including there's one by. This is completely off topic. But one that Stephen King's co-writing called American Vampire. So it's quite good.
Okay, cool. All right, that's it for our news. We just wanted to talk about that. And sorry about that little geek out. We get into comics and we get really geeky.
speaking of geeky.
And if, really? You do want, and if you do want to read that Superman Earth 1, it's the issue. It's written by J. Michael Straczynski and drawn by Shane Davis. Okay. So it's worth having a look at because I think we might be looking at a close connection.
No, it sounds fine.
All right, list of five. This week's list of five is five genre-bending / blending movies worth watching. And we're... description with Jon Favreau's new movie blending Western and sci-fi got us thinking. What other genre bending, blending, mixing? I almost did it. What other genre blending, bending,
you're
mixing
drunk.
Films are worth watching? Woo! Okay.
Dave's gone bye-bye.
what have you got, Egon?
I'm going to take him outside and put him down.
All right. Number five. Who's starting? I'll start. What the hell? All right. Jonathan Demme's 1986 film Something Wild is my first film. It's a film that starts off as a frivolous light comedy. You know, it's Jeff Daniels basically... really uptight little banker guy, doesn't know what to do with his life, meets wild child Melanie Griffith, who basically is completely out of her mind, has sex with her, and then basically it's drawn along in her little adventure of kind of drifting through life until about the halfway point. And at the halfway point, they go to a high school reunion, meet Ray Liotta in one of his first films, and the film instantly turns into a really dark thriller and just goes completely dark in every way.
Wow.
And it's brilliant. And Jonathan Demme, for those who don't know, is the guy who went on to direct Silence of the Lambs. So, and as soon as you come across Ray Liotta in that film with his psycho eyes, you go, there's something very wrong with this guy. You know, but it's really, really worth having a look at.
Cool.
Your number five.
My number five is Westworld.
Great film.
Yeah.
I thought about it.
It was one of the first ones I thought of, and it was actually, no, I tell a lie. It was one of the last ones. But I used to love this as a kid. As I've already said, I love westerns, and you know, mash up. It's instead of robots versus instead of cowboys versus aliens, it's cowboys who are robots
who are androids
versus humans.
Yeah,
which is and it's great, and I still love this. They tried to sort of recapture the magic a few years later. Was it Future World?
Future World.
Yeah. it didn't work at all.
No, Future World didn't work at all.
But wow. Westworld was the ultimate mashup. And that was, what, about 73-ish or a bit later? I can't remember.
It was early 70s. I actually saw it at the cinema. So I just got a message in the chat room I just have to share here. We get this little Ustream bot that pops in, and I think it's checking us out for copyright and stuff like that. And I've never actually seen it send us a message. Right. UstreamBot has said, UstreamBot is leaving. Need assistance with Ustream? It's like, why? Thank you. Bye. Yeah. Bye, Ustream.
Thanks for stopping.
Thank you. Thanks for stopping by. I hope you enjoyed the show.
Here's my theory and with bots, because on Twitter this week, bots seem to have really amped up their spam campaign.
Yeah.
So when the robot apocalypse happens, I think we're just going to have like bottles of Viagra thrown at us constantly, and breast enlargement advertisements just being.
That'll be Skynet. They'll bring the network to its knees by spam.
By spam,
yeah.
The
bots will attack.
All be so coked up on Viagra and Cialis that we won't know what's going on.
All right, Josh, your number five.
My number five is, sorry, list just went away. My number five is Outlander, which is essentially the same kind of concept. It is Vikings and aliens. It's not a particularly good film, but it's a fucking laugh riot.
I still haven't seen it.
It's so silly. But, you know, there's a small part of me that always loves that kind of a film. It's like, if you're going to have fun with something like that, I'm along for the ride.
Yeah.
As long as it's not... like terrible, like watch-checkingly terrible, I'll watch. Kind of enjoyed that.
Tripe Katana in the chat room.
Don't say it.
Trust me, guys. I've seen your comment, but I can't say it because it's actually on a couple of our lists.
Yes,
I think.
In fact, it might be on all of
them. All right, so my number four is Shaun of the Dead.
It's the same as my number four.
Okay.
Nice.
Look, here's a film that perfectly blends what should be just a silly comedy with a really good zombie flick.
It's I think Edgar Wright described it as a rom-com.
Rom-com. There you go. Yeah, no, fantastic.
I like that.
Yeah, no, really good. I think that's that's all that really needs to be said about
yep.
it.
Yep.
All right, so Josh, your number four.
My number four is Shanghai Noon. Woo. You know what? And if you don't like it, fuck you. I don't care. I love that film.
I didn't even think about it.
No, because it's like it's Jackie Chang's Eastern it's comedy Jackie. Kind of fucking beat
it's
up.
It's totally good.
And Owen Wilson before he tried to commit suicide and went all
oh, he totally
weird.
Tried to kill himself.
Man, I just thought of another one.
Shanghai Nights.
No,
sidelining my choice now?
No. In line with your choice, because the idea of having martial arts with Western, in the case of that one, there was an old movie. Was it called Red Sun? Is that the one I'm thinking of? Which was a samurai in the old West.
Yes, there was.
I completely forgot about that one, too.
Yeah. Well, and anyway, there's another one.
But yeah, Shanghai Noon is great.
Which also Shanghai Noon was fantastic.
Sukiyaki Django Western as well, which is another one I've forgotten about.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. No, and it was one of those films. It was a laugh ride. It was a good comedy. It was Owen Wilson before he went really shit. And it's just hilarious. It was
and
Jackie Chan
sequel.
Before he went and got
I
doughy.
Didn't mind the sequel. Yeah, it's not great, flat, but the first one's good.
The first one's good, though. That's a good choice. Really good choice. God, I wish I'd remembered that other film. It was Toshiro Mifune and Lee Marvin.
Oh, yes.
Lee Marvin. It was Lee Marvin.
It was definitely Toshiro Mifune.
Yeah.
And I've forgotten. I'll look it up.
Look it up. Samurai in the Old West. All right, my number three is Near Dark.
Nice.
Which is essentially just a vampire film, but it follows every trope of a Western down to a T. They're basically old cowboys. They're all very old, so they all lived through the Civil War and everything. The style of the filmmaking is actually a Western, even though it's set in modern days. Yeah, I mean, this film is just basically a vampire Western, but it's modern day. So, really good film. You saw it finally, didn't you? Near Dark.
Near Dark, yes.
Yeah, the Catherine Bigelow film. Yeah, I really like Near Dark.
The movie is called Red Sun.
Red Sun, that's the, Should have put that on my list. Anyway, you're number three.
My number three is, and I think it's a little higher on your list, is From Dusk Till Dawn.
Oh, yes.
What can I say about this? Well, should we wait till it comes on your list and we'll talk about it then?
Yeah, we'll save it until we get a bit higher.
Yeah.
All right, so your number two was...
My number three was
From Dusk Till Dawn. Josh, your number three?
Innocent Blood. You ever seen
that? Yeah.
Okay, now, bear with me here because I know that the film itself is actually tragically bad. But
I actually quite liked it.
Really? No, I couldn't go that far. But what I loved about it was the fact that I went into it with no idea that it was pretty much a mafia film. And the vampire thing was kind of an afterthought, kind of a thing going through the film. And that's the bit that I actually stuck through to the end with, was the fact that I love the fact that there's this like rolling kind of like, you know, sort of killing spree happening in this world of people that, you know, kind of go around killing people. So it doesn't really kind of feel
I quite liked it. I quite liked Innocent Blood. I always remember when John Landis, who directed that film, who also directed American Werewolf in London, when he came to Australia, because in Australian cinemas, they've reverted the name back for DVD, thank God. Yeah. But when it came out in cinemas in Australia, they actually renamed the film, and it was actually called A French Vampire in America. And John Landis was on one of the nighttime talk shows, and he came to promote his film, and they introduced the film, director of A French Vampire in America, and John Landis looked at him and went, what? He had no idea they changed the name on it.
Oh, wow.
And it's like, he's like, what? So from that moment of his reaction is just beautiful. Wow. But thankfully, they have reverted it back to Innocent Blood now.
Yeah.
So, but no, I kind of liked it. And there's that one scene in particular, I'll forever being burned into my memory. In an era before we did a lot of digital work or anything like that, that scene where Don Rickles is laying in the hospital bed and the curtains get opened and he just starts crackling and turning into embers is exceptionally well done.
Yeah, no. No, it's great. It was a really, really cool scene. And there are so many moments, little gems hidden inside this film that are actually really, really good. Couple of the scenes in the meat freezer factory and stuff like that were very good. And
it's not a perfect film. There's no American Werewolf in London, but it's okay. It's worth a watch. I quite liked it. I actually own a copy of it downstairs.
Oh, I might have to borrow it from you. All from you.
There you go. I got it.
Oh, you can fight over who lends it to me if you want.
We'll do it after the show.
My number two. I don't know if you guys have seen this movie. In fact, I thought this one's so hard to describe. I thought I'd bring a trailer in.
Nice.
So
let's do it.
Here you go.
Once, courageous knights roamed the land, searching for adventure. Ready to brave any challenge. Knight Riders. Knight is a fighting machine, disciplined in mind and heart, and noble to the death. Knight Riders. Action. Adventure. Romance. Heraldry. Pageantry. And magic.
Magic got to do with the soul, man. Only the soul got destiny.
Knight Riders, they ride for the crown. They fight for honor.
All right, so
mind has just been blown.
The film is
I didn't see that coming.
Is a 1981 film directed by George A. Romero, of all people.
Yeah.
And it is basically about a traveling carnival. It's like a Ren fair, but they joust off motorcycles and so forth. But they all take it very, very seriously. They live the code. They all live in the carnival. It's a really good film, actually, believe it or not. It was one of those films where I sat there and I saw it in the cinema and just went, what are we seeing again? And really enjoyed it. And it's like it's George A. Romero going completely out of his circle because this was the first time he'd not directed a horror film. And it's really interesting. And Ed Harris is really good as basically the King Arthur analogy. So good film. Have a look at it if you get a chance. Awesome. I actually had to buy it from the States, though. I don't think it's available in this country. So you can get it on Amazon, though.
Okay.
All right. Your number two.
My number two is a director I trot out on every one of these lists, Mulholland Drive, David Lynch. And, you know, to take a line out of David Lynch's book, it's about a girl in trouble. And it starts out that way.
And yet
way.
He made, built a whole movie around that.
You know, and we've spoken about this movie before because it was originally going to be a TV series.
Yeah.
And the movie was half of the intended pilot plus what he filmed afterwards. But, you know, it's one of those movies. It starts out with a girl coming to Hollywood. There's a car crash. And then a whole lot of other stuff happens, and it changes genre at least three times, I think.
Yeah, let's not beat around the bush here. It actually starts as a fairly good film and then goes completely batshit crazy.
Which is what I love about
makes no sense whatsoever. No. It has no ending. So
And that's what I love about David Lynch. And I will stand by this film as one of his, if not his masterpiece, one of his masterpieces.
Oh, I so disagree. I like early Lynch. I really didn't like
I like early Lynch as well, but I absolutely
and,
love
and
this
look,
film.
And look, we'll let him have it.
Yeah, we'll let you
I'm
have
gonna
it.
I'm going to stay completely quiet on that one.
You're number two, Josh.
My number two is actually
Knight
a
Riders,
film
right?
we saw this week. it's a film we saw this week. I think the Fright Night 2011 version is going
I think you actually go so far as to say both versions.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, well, look, I've seen both now, and I think just because I didn't see it in its era, I much prefer the new one. I think that it was a really good blend of comedy and horror, but in the best kinds of ways. Like, this is what we need to look at to get this back to where it should be. Like, as you said, this is where horror used to be. And it was always kind of a blending of the two genres.
And the other thing I love about Fright Night, this remake, is the fact that it does everything that a remake is supposed to do.
It is
faithful, and it is what's the word I'm looking for to the original. It is
pays homage
to the original.
Captures the spirit of.
Thank you. That'll do too. Either of those phrases, but makes it its own thing as well.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
So many remakes go, oh, we have to do it better. We have to do it bigger, and they completely ignore the original.
And I love the fact that the few times
pays
that they
homage.
Wink to,
that's what
I mean. Yeah. When they wink to camera, the few times that they really do wink to camera in this film. It's so downplayed that no one, like, it's not a big flashing sign above their head letting you know who it is. It's just people in the crowd go, aha, and that was it. And that was really good. That was exactly how it should be. And I love films that successfully blend genres like that. Just having the humor in there, but never losing the tone of either kind of film at the time. So, yeah.
Well, I just thought of another one that could be in the honorary mentions, but we'll come back to that. All right. My number one is your number three.
It's number three.
And your number one. Is that right?
Possibly. I'm not sure.
No, I don't think it is.
No, it's not even on your list. I'm surprised. My number one is From Dusk Till Dawn.
From Dusk Till Dawn.
The 1996 Robert Rodriguez film. Look, this film took everybody off guard. And the reason why this film was such a genre bender was because it feels like for the first hour of this one, the first 40 minutes of this film, feels like a Tarantino Pulp Fiction style mob film. And then they get to the titty bar, the titty twister,
mm.
and the film completely changes tone. Sorry,
they introduce Salma Hayek to the world.
They introduce Salma Hayek to the world, and she was introduced in Desperado.
She was, but not
and then,
in this way.
And then, not like this, mm. and then the whole film just turns into this monster vampire film. Mm. And I remember talking to people who go, what the fuck?
Yeah.
You know, like, I was watching this Tarantino film, and then it turned into this other thing. Mm. People didn't know. They didn't get it, you know? And I love that. I love that about the film. I love the fact that I said when I came out of the cinema in 96, I said that was the most fun I had had at the cinema in years.
Yeah.
You know? I just had a blast.
I saw this at the cinema back in 96 as well. I wasn't 18. It was got a R rating here in Australia, which was restricted, but I somehow still managed to see this at the cinema.
Our rating system.
Yeah, because our rating system's awesome. So that's right. I'm just admitting publicly that I technically broke the law back in 1996.
I think we're past. But, I think we're past the what's that period of time that you know?
Statute of limitations. I should know this. I have a law degree. But yeah, look, I'm with you, David. This is to me, it was a perfect blend of almost perfect because it's not my number one. It's a perfect blend of that genre bending. Yeah. It sort of does. What they did years later with Grindhouse, which was kind of start off as one thing, move into another, but kind of get that whole exploitation thing. It's so much fun. They've got it was Greg Nicotero did the special effects in there.
Yeah.
I mean, Tom Savini's actually in the cast.
Yep.
And
for those who don't know, Tom Savini actually taught Greg Nicotero how to do effects work. So it's like that's his master.
He's a damn good actor in it as well.
He's also in the original Dawn of the Dead. And he's actually in Knight Riders. He plays Morgan Knight Riders. So a very physical actor. He's very.
But it's got Harvey Keitel as a preacher, which is great. Even Juliette Lewis is tolerable.
I'm sorry, the steak and the shotgun together to make the cross. Brilliant stuff.
And the water pistols with holy water. It's great, you know.
Yeah, good fun.
And it was actually Clooney's first major Hollywood role, I think.
I think it was. It was before Batman, wasn't it?
It was before Batman, and it was it's his first big role, and he actually does speak highly of it for Tarantino, giving him the chance, because at the time, most people just saw him as a TV soap
and
drama actor.
He was fantastic in it. Yeah. He was really good.
Mm. Yeah. And
really
tough. It gave people that alternate impression. He's not just the nice doctor from TV.
And let's remember, this was also the film that got Michael Parks Red State.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
This is the film where Kevin Smith saw him in that and went, I want him in Red State.
So. He played virtually the same character in that he did in the Kill Bill films.
Yeah.
I think they don't even have the same name.
Because he was also in Grindhouse as well. He was in Planet Terror.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, he was.
Yeah, so... Yeah. He's a terrific actor. From Dusk Till Dawn, absolutely genre bending.
Damn straight.
Brilliant. Mm. And your number one?
My number one is Back to the Future.
Oh, that's good.
Oh, nice.
It's not only is it sort of one of those films that I often say is in my top one of all time, to me it's a perfect blend of genres because it starts off as a movie about a high school kid, then it becomes a time travel movie, and then it's a period piece for a while, then it becomes a romance. You kind of forget about the fact that he's got to get back to the future, and then it ends with a spectacular time travel sequence again. Yeah. And it's got absolutely everything. And I actually think, and I'll go on, it's one of those few movies where I will give it 5 stars across the board. It holds up 100% of the way. It recently had its 25th anniversary and it was re-released on Blu-ray. It's not a frame of that film is dated in any way.
No.
It's beautiful from start to finish.
I'd just like to point out that in our chat room, Northy is saying the Ustream bot. He's saying the Ustream bot is listening. Please give me more ideas on this robot apocalypse you speak of. Sorry, that's a geek actually thing. Josh, you're number one.
My number one is a film that I talk about and is probably almost vaulted, if not vaulted
already.
I'd be
interested to see,
Brick.
Great film.
Look, I mean, this film took what was noir cinema, it took it into a high school and then played out somewhere between noir and drama, but then also manages to blend a whole lot of hilarity in between, but that really kind of noir humor.
Well, it was a Raymond Chandler book set in high school. It was brilliant.
Exactly.
So
and it
clever.
It took what was a very cliched kind of a concept and just took it somewhere completely different and played it out differently. Like, it had that same kind of quick-talking nature to it, but just
dark, almost dark thriller. Instead,
Ryan Johnson's a legend. I mean, he also did The Brothers Bloom, which came out a little bit later, which also kind of blends genres a little bit as well, which is fantastic. And he's got a new film called Looper being made, which I'm really looking forward to, science fiction films. So, Ryan Johnson did an amazing job with that film. Brick is just fantastic.
Yeah, good cast and everything. Yeah, it's great. Mm. Yeah.
And so that's the film that you actually really get a real sense of respect for Levin, for Gordon Levin. I mean, it's just a fantastic performance from him, you know? Great stuff. I got a couple honorary mentions we can throw in here. I actually put Serenity as an honorary mention because of the blending of sci-fi and Western. The reason why I didn't make the list, though, is because I think Firefly, the series, does it better. I think they kind of ditched the Western aspect of it for the movie, but it still has a little bit of that. Krull, something that Josh brought up on a list previously because of the fact that it's fantasy with science fiction elements in it. And one I just thought of off the top of my head is another honorary mention for you is Shallow Grave, which basically does the same thing that Something Wild does. Starts off kind of funny, kind of silly, and turns dark at around the halfway point.
Fucking,
you know?
Dark as anything.
Yeah, so that's another one I just thought of as we were actually doing this list.
Can I send a big shout out to my girlfriend Susan, who actually sent me through my list of to my top five because I'd left it at home.
Thank you, Susan.
Otherwise, it would have been a very short ride. So Mike, can I? A couple of my quick honorable mentions is one. I think I saw you typing down at one point, Josh, but.
I took it off because it was the same reason I kind of had Brick on. It's like it is, and like at one stage I had G.I. Joe on there as well, but it's more a blending of action styles as opposed to a blending of actual.
We won't keep you in suspense any longer. It's Scream.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. Well, which falls in the same category as Frightmares.
And I also put down Picnic at Hanging Rock, which is because it is.
That mixes drama and sleep.
And sleep, yes. But it turns into sort of almost supernatural movie halfway through. And I'd go so far as to say one of my all-time favorite films, which is Singing in the Rain. Because it's a musical. And you could almost say this of any musical, really. Yeah. It's blending genres. But it's unique in the sense that it's actually a movie about filmmaking that's also a musical built within a musical, and it's a musical itself. And all this sort of stuff. It is... Again, one of those films that we'll never do.
Another one that I just thought of as well, Josh, I'm surprised neither of us thought of it, was New Nightmare, Wes Craven's New Nightmare. That's another one that could fall into this very, very easily. That's
fantastic. Hell, I think we've all forgotten a really obvious one, which is Star Wars.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Now, we will do a little bit of feedback here very quickly because one of the feedbacks is about our list. Jordan, also known as Zed, basically sent us a long email. It's got lots of links for geek shows, and I do apologize. Well, we've actually got a few of these things coming up next week's geek show because we had to cancel this week. But he does suggest a list of five about five actors, actresses, directors we would watch in anything, which we did talk about for this week. We might do that in a coming week because that's actually really good. I like that. Yeah. Also, five foreign movies that are definitely worth watching. We've actually done foreign movies before. Josh and I did it many months ago. So
let's pick a country, and why don't you pick a country each? And
there's a challenge for you.
Yeah.
Now he also says you guys did color movies, but didn't bring up either Pitch Black or Black Hawk Down.
I thought about both of those films. So didn't you actually?
And it says even though you mentioned Pitch Black earlier in the show.
Sure. Yeah.
So sorry about the omission. That's fine. And we also I also want to point out that Austin Powers 4 is coming. Yes, we actually knew that one. So
you know what? I was actually saying just before they made this announcement the other day, I was saying to someone, you know what? It's time for Wayne's World 3.
Yeah, we talked about this, though.
And I know there are reasons, but I'd like a Wayne's World time. I don't care what the reasons are. I don't care how sick Dana Carvey is.
Dana Carvey's sick, man. He's not going to do another Wayne's World.
Drag him out. You make the whole thing set in one room.
Now, this is actually from Mike from Canada, who was in our chat room, but he's had to leave. But he says, hey, Josh. You think you're so smart.
Not really, but all right.
Creating a list of five that does not allow me to mention the superior film Minority Report.
I tried.
Well, Josh, there comes a time in many man's life where he has to admit to being defeated, and this is not one of those times. If you rearrange the letters in Minority, you can spell the word mint. Mint is a shade of spring green, therefore Minority Report qualifies and replaces your number one film of last week.
Well, I'm gonna tip my hat for the effort.
And he says, "Boom, biatch, you've been served."
except for I don't know what he did with the rest of the letters.
What happened to the rest of those letters, dude? He does. Then goes on to say, David and Richard, keep up the great work.
Good to know.
And now he also says one more thing. If Richard, this is once again, this campaign that is happening for Richard. One more thing. If Richard becomes a permanent host, then the show should be called Film Actually Featuring RDJ. Everyone will think the show will feature Robert Downey Jr. You will have a great deal of listeners. However, once they realize it takes three people to imposter Robert Downey Jr., the listeners will be disappointed.
Where are you getting RDJ from?
Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah, but why am I...
Richard, Dave, Josh.
Oh, right. Sorry.
Slow on the pickup.
You really need to get some caffeine.
And who's Robert Downey Jr.?
However, where is it? Dave, singer. You may not be in favor of pissing off the listeners, but you do subject us to Josh's list of five every week. Oh, thank you and good night, Mike from Canada. Thank you very much, Mike.
And who's our DJ?
RDJ is Robert Downey Jr.
Sorry. Where are we?
Can we finish this show before he falls apart?
Rachel Atkinson from the Funky Film Show over in Fremantle says, I was sorely disappointed that none of you mentioned the phenomenal Australian Western horror thriller Red Hill.
Oh, no, I'm
sorry. I haven't seen it yet.
Sorry.
That's what I wrote to her. I wrote back to her and said, I haven't seen it. She goes, you're forgiven. But she said, Richard would have seen it. He's seen everything.
I have seen it. And it is phenomenal. It is really good. And I'm now kicking myself. Hang on. What? Witness? I've just kicked myself. Oh, that really hurt.
She says, it was in my top 10 last year. We were lucky enough to interview the director last year and promised it didn't make me biased towards the film. It's freaking awesome. And if you all missed it, you need to get it out. That is all.
It is good. It is good. It's available on Blu-ray here in Australia as well.
And then she says, wait. No, it's not. Side note. Saw Cowboys and Aliens last night. Gave it a solid 3.5. Thought it was quite good. Don't know what I was so worried about. Has John Favreau ever steered me wrong?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a good point. I did.
I would still argue Zathura, but you like
I like Zathura. I think Zathura is fun. I did find it hard to watch Harrison Ford thanks to the Kevin Smith, Ralph Garman podcast, Hollywood Babylon. I agree. where they take the piss out of the way he talks and low mumbly these days on a weekly basis. Daniel Craig, however, sounds like what Harrison Ford used to sound like about 30 years ago.
Yeah,
fair enough. Kind of acts that way, too. Regardless, agree with the small note you made this week about the critics. I have no idea what film they were watching. I quite enjoyed it. Blah, blah, and she goes on. And so thank you very much, Rachel. So, yeah, Funky Film Show is with us. And last but not least, I have to share this with you. This is quite possibly the funniest thing I have read this week.
Okay.
All right? And because we don't get a Geek Actually show this week, we get to do this. This will be our one little Geek Actually moment. All right? Tristan writes to us and says, hey, guys, Joe's just watching Disney's 2000 movie Dinosaur.
Ah.
Remember Dinosaur?
Yeah.
I like Dinosaur.
I like Dinosaur.
With my son, and decided to look it up online when I came across this ridiculous review that made me laugh but also quite angry at the same time. The link is in our show notes. These are some kind of people who don't think that video games cause us... these are the same kind of people who think that video games cause us to want to kill people, blah, blah, blah. You know, I've written back to Tristan because I've actually found out a little bit about this, all right? Now, it's actually the Landover Baptist Church is where this review was written. And let me just give you a taste. It says, Dinosaur, the latest propaganda film from the Disney company, tries to indoctrinate America's children with the idea that it's A-okay to have disgusting sexual relations outside of a Christian... out of a Christian marriage. Once again, dinosaurs are being used to pollute our children's mind and turn them wantonly to promiscuous, deviant sex acts. Barney taught our youngsters that it was fine and dandy to be a big flaming sissy who wears outrageously homosexual colors like purple. And it goes on and on. And I've already spoken to Tristan about this. It is a parody.
It is.
The entire thing is a parody site. But it is quite possibly the funniest parody site I've ever been to. And if you want a really good laugh, you go to their gift shop. Because their gift shop is genius. And I want the one that says, Jesus is watching you touch yourself.
That's fantastic.
It is brilliant. And you go through this thing and they've got reviews on games. They've got reviews on everything. And they are just, everything is outrageous. And it's so... It's the funniest part of this whole thing is to go into the comments boards.
Oh, yeah.
Because you go into the comments under these articles, half the people don't know it's a parody.
Oh, wow.
And that is where it gets really funny because the parody stuff the people are sitting there going, I can't believe they're saying that about such. Other people are going, troll. It's like, get over yourself. So, no, it is a brilliant site and we're always funny. But remember, the entire thing is satire. All right. Please take it for what it is meant to be. And but yes.
I love their slogan, though. The Landover Baptist Church, guaranteeing salvation since 1620.
What's it say? The largest, most powerful assembly of worthwhile people to ever exist. a godly perspective on local, national, and world news. No, it is a very, very funny site and well worth having a look at. So I just thought I would share that with you because that, if nothing else, read the dinosaur review because it just gets more and more extreme as it goes on. It is hysterically funny. All right, that's it. That's our feedback, guys. So I want to thank you, everybody, for writing in. If you want to send us feedback, send it to feedback@filmactually.com. You can drop us a voicemail as well, 02-8011-3167. Or, of course, we are also on Skype. So the Skype ID is geekactually, all one word. So if you don't want to call from outside of the state, you can use that instead. Get our merchandise, join the fan page, follow us on Twitter, do all of that stuff. Anything you, if you want to social network us, we're there. You just got to go to geekactually.com, hit the big follow us button, and you'll be able to find all our various places of where we are. Now, Josh, where can people find out more about you?
No. Harrison Ford, apparently.
You can find Josh pissing by the dumpster.
I'll take it out of Harrison Ford speak now. You can check me out at rawdlc.com. We have restarted the weekend opinion section, so anybody that wants to head over there and add to it, this week we are talking about games that didn't make it out into the world. So games that we really liked and thought were a cool concept and then just vanished off the face of the earth. Cool. So, head over and check that out and also everything else we have up there.
Fantastic. And Richard, where can people find you?
We can find me here regularly, apparently. And you can also find me on my own site, therealbits.com. That's REELBITS.com. You can also find me on DVDBits.com and on Twitter perpetually at DVDBits.
I do tweet a lot. You tweet a lot.
Yeah.
And both of you have kind of become mysteriously absent on Google Plus.
Yeah, look, I still can't get into Google Plus, and I think that's because it's just not, I don't know, there's not enough interactivity there. I think I've invested so much time in Twitter, and I've got like, because, you know, I'm up to something like just shy of 1,000 Twitter followers. I've got a lot of conversations happening there. Yeah. I don't have that on.
Yeah, agreed. And there is actually also an article that was going to be in our Geek Action show today if we hadn't canceled it, but there was actually a story. Some analysts are basically saying Google may have actually killed itself by being this closed beta because the conversations are actually very small and there's not a lot of people. And I mean, okay, they've got 10 million active users, but something like 60% of them are private conversations. They're not public. So there isn't a lot of stuff happening. And so people come into it and they go, what's this all about?
Yeah.
So they really need to drop the beta tag. They need to make it open for people to join and just get it going because it's the GP that's going to make it actually take off.
Absolutely.
So anyway, we'll see what happens with all that. But now, a couple of shout outs, Charlie and Brad. Find them over at reboundradio.com. Ooh. They do a podcast called Good Day, Sir.
Good Day, Sir.
I love that podcast name. Go over to theweekendronan.com, and you can find the Real Junkies podcast. And I've got a shout out here for the Real Junkies. I haven't seen a new episode in a couple of weeks. Where are you guys? I'm missing my Real Junkies.
What happened? If you're not going to give us an episode, at least give us an understanding of why not.
Yeah, that's right. They're obviously busy. But
do you think there was too much tequila in the last episode?
Maybe. Their last episode was mega. It was like three parts because it was like their big anniversary thing.
It's the Lost Weekend.
Yeah, I think it was. But you can find the weekendrunning.com or search for them on iTunes, REEL Junkies. And we also want to do a shout out to our friend Josh Spencer over at attackninja.blogspot.com. And I also, which is one of the best domain names ever, by the way. Yes. I also want to do a quick shout out to Amy Flowers, who has recently exchanged links with us, and she is wonderful.
And so she's at gamesblip.com.
She's at gamesblip.com. Yeah.
She is prolific and amazing.
She is amazing, and I have invited her on the show.
Dude, she does reviews. I'm not sure if you guys know the story behind her. Yeah, she does 300-word reviews, and that's a self-imposed maximum, and she still manages in every review to nail exactly what she needs to say. They're always funny. They're always well-written. And she just writes so often that I worry about her. I actually worry about her. Like,
she seems to get sick every time she runs out of things to review.
I've known Amy for a while because she used to write with me on DVD Bits.
Nice.
And her, if you want to look at some of her older reviews for films and things, they're hilarious as well. So check out DVD. It's a subtle plug, DVDBits.com, but just check out Amy's stuff because it's brilliant. So.
Yep. Yeah, and she's and her game reviews on GamesBleep are hysterical. So absolutely, do check her out. And we are trying to. I suppose I invited her on the show, and she goes, "But I'm in Melbourne." I went, "That's what Skype is for."
Absolutely.
So I have no problem with that. We'll bring her.
Physical space is not a barrier to film, actually.
Absolutely not. All right, we're going to close the show out today with a track from Basil Poledouris' original score to Conan.
I knew that was going to happen. I said that like halfway through the week. I was like, Dave's going to finish on old Conan.
Why? Because I actually had my finger poised over buying the new Conan soundtrack, and I just couldn't bring myself to do it.
No.
It's a lackluster, boring soundtrack. I almost bought the Cowboys and Aliens soundtrack.
I've actually bought the Cowboys and Aliens soundtrack.
That's actually a pretty good soundtrack.
And it's good.
But I've said it many times on the show. Conan the Barbarian, the Basil Poledouris score, is actually one of my favorite scores of all time. So any chance I have to play this, I will. So this is a track called Anvil of Crom. It's actually the opening track of the film. And of course, I don't think I need to explain it at all, but that opening clip at the beginning of our show was, of course, from from Conan the Barbarian.
You felt the lamentations of the women.
The 1982 film. All right, I'm done. You guys got anything else?
Got nothing.
You got nothing at all? No. And in that case, we're going to say go see more movies. You don't see enough movies. And all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we'll see you all next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.